Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I've got a jam-packed episode this day. It's going to be so much fun. You know how it is when we talk to quilters. We just can go on and on about the best stuff ever. So the first person I have on is Kim Brackett. And if you love scrap quilts, you are going to just be wowed by Kim's work. She has got such a great way of looking at scraps and putting them together that I just adore her books and her quilts in the books. They're so fabulous. And I really think scrap quilts are sort of trending right now because, you know, we all want to be able to find a way to use up all those things that we've collected. So Kim, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you're here.
Hi, Pat. Thank you.
Now, you know, when did you actually get the bug, Kim? When did you start quilting? Because you are an avid quilter.
Well, I started in 1988. I bought Judy Martin's Ultimate Book of Quilt Block Patterns. Mm-hmm. And I bought fabrics and tools and stacks of Mylar sheets.
Oh.
And I cut out templates and I practiced making quilt blocks for about 8 years.
Oh, you just practiced, huh?
Mm-hmm. Hand sewed blocks together, and eventually I met my friend Karen Williamson, and we started working on an applique project that took about 2 years. So I tell everybody that it took me 10 years to finish my first quilt.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny! I think so many of us still have our first quilt undone. Do you hear that a lot?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I did finish my first quilt. It's not a beauty, but it's done. Oh, gosh. Kim, what you really started out, you know, with the basic skills then.
I did. I didn't ever put any of those blocks together, but I learned No. Oh, no. And then I learned to machine piece, so that was a lot faster, so.
Now, had you been sewing beforehand, before you made those blocks by hand? Had you been sewing on the machine prior to that?
I did. My mom taught me to quilt when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you'd been already sewing. It's just, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, cool. So, you know, you have several books. They're all focused on scrap quilting. I think maybe everybody owns the Scrap Basket Surprises. That's such a the first book is just been a classic. I see it everywhere. How did it come about that you decided to write a book? Now several books.
Well, it was kind of accidental. I had a lot of scraps, and I couldn't fit any more into my container. It had an 18-gallon Rubbermaid container and couldn't get the lid on it. So I dumped it out and cut everything into 2.5-inch strips. And then I drew lots and lots of designs on electric quilt software.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing around on Martingale's website one day, and I noticed a link that said submit a book proposal. So out of curiosity, I clicked on the link, and it opened an Outlook email that was addressed to Martingale, and it asked to send me a book proposal form. So I hit send, and they sent the form, and the form asked for my credentials, and of course I didn't have any.
Oh.
And then it asked for a list of classes that I taught, and I didn't teach any classes.
Mm-hmm.
So I submitted the form anyway, and I got a call from Martingale a few weeks later saying that they wanted to publish my book.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and they have just been so fabulous to work with.
Were you really surprised, considering that you weren't able to fill out part of the what might have looked like the criteria to be accepted?
Oh, yes. I was very shocked. I still can't believe they let me do this.
Well, you know, your work, you put things together in such a great way. Let's talk about scraps. Do you actually have some sort of a system for controlling your scraps, or, you know, that you know what you have? You know, how do you process them?
Well, usually I cut the scraps into 2.5-inch strips, and I sort those either by color or by style, like batik or Civil War fabrics, and put them all into little storage containers, shoebox-sized containers.
Oh, okay.
And it's just easy to pull out things you need when you start a new project.
So if you were doing it sort of by style, like you have the Civil War in one area, do you then sort them in color by Civil War, or you just don't worry about that?
No, I just don't worry about that a lot.
Okay. Okay, so do you have a recommendation for people like me who don't have a lot of space that might want to keep scraps, you know, how to keep less of, how do you keep less of them, Kim?
Well,
multiply,
you
know.
Yeah, you have to use those scraps.
Oh, use them. That's the answer.
Yeah. No, I store all of my containers underneath the table, out of the way, so you don't trip over them. I'm lucky enough to have a spare bedroom that I use for my sewing space, so that helps. But and I stash things in closets, and I take over other parts of the house too. And
so
I have batting in the linen closet.
It's having containers that can stack that are all like the same size probably makes it more organized and compact.
It does.
Yeah. Rather than. I actually opened a drawer in my sewing table and found strips. I have no idea when I put them in there, why they're in there. I'm like, what is going on with me? So I have to be more organized to do that. I think that's the key. So your book, your latest book, you have Scrap Basket Surprises, Scrap Basket Sensations, and Scrap Basket Beauties. How are your books laid out? Are they all similar layout?
They are. All three of them each have 18 patterns for quilts using 2.5-inch strips. And
okay.
You can use jelly rolls or scraps or your sash fabrics. Mm-hmm. And they all use triangle-free techniques for folded corner units and half-square triangles and split units. The patterns are all really easy, so they're good for beginners, but then also for advanced quilters.
Right. I think that they're very brilliant. I mean, because some of them look way more complex than they probably are. You know, when you look at them, the final quilt, it's like, wow, that's, you know, a lot of work, but you break it down into very doable units.
They're all very simple.
Okay, yeah. So what's this triangle-free technique? Because, you know, I'm a triangle junkie, so I can't really give up my triangles, but... do you actually just make things that look like triangles, or you just don't use any?
I don't use any. I start with squares and rectangles. Mm-hmm. For years, I had a machine that would eat the corners whenever I sewed triangles, so it wasn't a lot of fun. So I like this technique because it seems to be more forgiving, and I'm able to get sharper points.
Okay.
You just sew a square to a rectangle or another square, and sew it diagonally and fold the corner back to meet the background, and you get the size you need every time.
So are you, when you do that, now you have two layers. Do you cut away the bottom layer that isn't visible anymore?
I do to reduce the bulk.
Right. Okay. And you don't ever find, like with that technique, you know, I have used it and I do like it a lot. But occasionally, and I bet this happens to other people, is occasionally I don't get it so that it matches. Like the part that should be on top, when I fold it back, it's too short. Mm-hmm. What am I doing wrong?
You've sewn too far away from that little corner area.
Okay.
If you sew a little bit closer to the corner, then it'll fold, and then you can press it, and it'll be the either correct size.
Ah. Now, you also have some fun things in the newest book, The Scrap Basket Beauties. I'm just fascinated by the cover quilt, which is the hourglass. That one, you use like a ruler to get that shape, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a cutting guide in the book that you can copy or trace, and tape it to your ruler, and you just cut along the cutting guide.
Okay, so then that works pretty good to keep it, you know, each of the ones that are even then, since you're sort of placing it on a specific line of the ruler to get that hourglass shape.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I like
the
that
cutting
line.
Guide has a line in the middle.
Oh, okay.
And you just place that along the seam line.
Perfect. I might have to make that one. That is so cool.
Well, thank you.
Now, what is the best way to decide on colors for a scrap quilt? I mean, do you mix them all up like crazy, or are you a little bit more controlled?
I like the more controlled quilts. I use a lot of different fabrics, but I try to find some common element that ties everything together. Mm-hmm. I'll use maybe a single background fabric and then random scraps as the main fabric. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a 2 or 3 color quilt. Mm-hmm. And then just repeat the colors in each block.
So would you put like the Millennium fabric from, you know, the year 2000 with your Civil War, with your, really bright children's print? Would you put all those in one quilt?
Probably not.
I think that would
be hard. I don't really do the brights with the traditional colors, mm-hmm. but I kind of keep those separated.
Ah, so now people can find you out on the internet at magnoliabayquilts.blogspot.com. Mm-hmm. You have a beautiful blog. You do amazing photography.
Oh, thank you. I'm not that good a photographer. I just usually take 30 pictures of the same thing and then throw out 29.
Well, you did a good job. You talk on your blog, I noticed that you'll share little tips and tricks and sometimes do little sew-alongs. Do you just blog a couple times a month then, or?
Yes. I try to do it more often, but, you know, things happen, and it's hard to keep up with things. Sometimes I work full-time as a paralegal, and mm-hmm. sometimes it's just hard to do all of it.
Oh, I know. Absolutely. When you have to go to that day job and come home and do your fun stuff, it's crazy. But people can go visit you and check out your books, and you travel and teach just a little bit. Do you post that on there when you are out and about?
I blog sometimes about where I've been, but I normally don't really keep up with a calendar. I don't teach that often.
Right.
I teach a few times a year maybe, but I don't get the opportunity very much because of my daytime gig.
Okay, well, that's all right. People can always write you from your website, magnoliabayquilts.blogspot.com, and check out your books.
Well, thank you so much.
Kim, this has been wonderful to have you on the show. I really appreciate your insight into scrap quilts, and your quilts are totally amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It was so good to talk to you.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we'll be right back after the break.
Win free stuff! Find out about our newest online sweepstakes and contests and how you can enter at allpeoplequilt.com/promos.
The Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show is about to start. First up, the exotic fabrics of Cusco by Kate Spain and Chant, with rich fuchsia, indigo, and orchid. Do you hear that? It's the ocean breezes coming from the Seascapes collection by Deb Strain. It's no mystery. You'll love the Get a Clue with Nancy Drew line. Hearts and flowers and houndstooth, oh my. Kissing Booth by Basic Gray brings romance to the runway. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
C.
see what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have Leah Day back to talk about free motion quilting. I know that you just love these segments every month because all of us want to learn more about free motion quilting. I really think that that's sort of trending for quilters. I mean, quilters have always wanted to quilt their own quilts, but there's just sort of a lot more information available so we can get better and learn more. And Leah's here today. She's going to tell me a bit about, we're going to talk a bit about getting over that fear of making the right decision with your designs. You know, always it's like, you know, what do I quilt? What do I quilt? So we're going to sort of get you past that hurdle and get you started. Hi, Leah. Welcome back.
Hey, Pat. This is a really exciting topic. I can't wait to tell you about some ideas of getting started.
Yeah, you know, people, you know, they really do say, you know, they just don't know what to do. You know, you have sort of taken on a challenge personally, you, Leah, to help people get over that hurdle, haven't you?
Absolutely. I mean, that's just, it kind of came part and parcel with coming up with hundreds of designs. I started getting a lot of questions of, well, where do you use these designs in your quilts and that kind of thing. And the thing that I always answer is anything goes anywhere you want. The thing you have to do is you have to develop an opinion. A quilter, you show her a double wedding ring, you show her a grandmother's flower garden, and she'll be able to tell you which one she likes better. But if you show someone stippling and another design called paisley and you ask her, they'll probably just say, well, I don't know.
Right.
So I think looking at quilting, you know, going to shows and seeing what you like, and instead of being intimidated by it, and I know that it can be very intimidating, mm-hmm. But instead of letting that fear get in your way, instead just look at it and say, okay, I want to quilt that, mm-hmm. and then start taking the steps to get there.
Let's sort of walk through where a large majority of quilters are. Most quilters, you know, big group of quilters are piecers. They piece traditional blocks. That's, you know,
absolutely
what they do. They don't have a lot of open space. They have a lot of patterned fabric, you know, so their fabric has a lot of pattern on it, and it's a lot of block by block, side by side. How do you start looking at those sort of traditional piece blocks?
Well, in that kind of situation, I would probably look at that and say, well, that's good for something very simple. A very simple quilting design would be excellent to start with, because if you're going to put something really complicated in very heavily patterned fabric, well, it's going to disappear. It's just not going to show up, and you're going to be kind of wasting your time unless mm-hmm. you have maybe a contrast back. That's not going to show. So
right.
I would say start with just like, if let's say you had flying geese. Do
right.
a little wiggly line through the center of the flying geese. And that's just a little bit of something to make that area pop. Do you have to do it? Absolutely not. The thing about quilting that I guess is confusing to a lot of people, they see these quilts that are just really, really densely quilted, and they think, well, I don't really want to do that. But then the flip side of that is a quilt that is only stitched in the ditch, nothing else mm-hmm. added. And they look at that and say, well, that's not very creative. You know, where's the middle?
The middle, right, right. And a lot of people start with that stitch in the ditch because it's safe, it's comfortable, and it does hold the three layers together.
Exactly.
But it doesn't add
hidden.
Any beauty to the quilt.
Yes, and it's hidden, so you don't get any negative points. Design will never get hurt mm-hmm. by stitching in the ditch. But just taking that little extra step of just saying, okay, I can put a little wiggly line in that triangle. I could put a little spiral in that square. I mean, these are simple, simple shapes. They're not marked. They're just something that you can kind of get in there, wiggle in, wiggle out. I think a great thing that everyone should start doing is hanging your quilt up on a wall or put it on the ground and kind of try and get up on top of it so you can take a photo. Take a photo of it flat and carry that photo around with you for a week. And mm-hmm. just draw on the surface. Just, you know, print out some copies on plain paper and just play with drawing. Mm-hmm. Simple, simple lines, you know, just straight lines can look really, really good on traditional blocks. And it's not going to be any more difficult than stitching in the ditch. You know, that's a great place to get started.
Oh, you know, I hadn't really thought about doing the photograph and drawing on it. There's some other tools that are out there, which I don't know, they might not be, that might be just the easiest thing, but I use an online program called PicMonkey that you can go in and actually draw on top of your photo. It has
Yeah,
so you can go in and then you can save the photos. Also, I know people who have taken like the clear, some sort of clear plastic or...
tree vinyl, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then they can see what it looks like and, you know, sort of, you know, erase it a little bit if they, I guess, use a dry erase one. But now, do you, just keeping on traditional blocks for a second, do you feel like they have to have a certain level of quilting?
No, absolutely not. Here's here's how you know how much quilting you need. Let's say the answer is it depends entirely on your batting.
Right.
Your batting sets the stage for how much quilting you have to have. So let's say you get a batting, and my favorite batting is Quilter's Dream polyester batting. Mm-hmm. And on the batting package, it will say something like quilting up to 10 inches, which is, I think, what Quilter's Dream poly says. So mm-hmm. that means that I can literally quilt 10-inch lines across my quilt and call it done. Or probably I would say, you know, lines about 9 inches apart, so that way the quilting is within that 10-inch size. So that's all you have to do. That rating is letting you know how much the batting's going to shift. So mm-hmm. if you really want to be minimalist, that's how little you have to do. But of course, you know, getting into the design side of things, we want a little bit more. And it's taking yourself away from the idea, okay, I'm terrified of anything showing, I'm terrified of doing anything wrong, and accept the idea that everything is right. Everything mm-hmm. looks good, and you are going to do just fine.
More in, which I think people, absolutely. You know, if you want to go a little bit less and then mm-hmm. look at it, mull it over, and then you can always add to it.
Yeah, you can stitch in the ditch mm-hmm. and stop and put it on the wall and look at it and go, okay, well, what next? Because stitching in the ditch, you know, it's hidden, it's secured, so that way all your pens are out, and then you could look at it again and say, okay, well, I would like some spirals right there, and I'd like a little flower shape and maybe some hearts over here, and just kind of look at it. I think coloring books, you know, my son brings home coloring books a lot. Mm-hmm. Flipping through those and seeing some different symbols and shapes and stuff is a really great idea. Dover Publications has a lot of copyright-free or just open-source images that are very inspirational. And you can take something like that, print it out, create kind of a template, and mark mm-hmm. it if you really want something very exact on the surface of your quilt.
Well, let's talk a little bit about a different style quilt now. Let's talk about applique. I do a lot of applique, and there's often a lot of background. People want their applique to be the feature, not the quilting. So the quilting is a enhancement. It gives texture to the background. How do you think about background texture for applique?
I think it's absolutely essential. I think that really your applique can just be stitched up a whole nother notch if mm-hmm. you pick something to go in the background of that design. And, you know, you're going to match thread color in that situation. This is one of the, you know, times that I would say absolutely positively match thread color with
right.
your background.
Right.
And this is one of the reasons why I fell in love with McTavishing. Karen McTavish's books are just so inspirational because she used McTavishing, that swirling, flowing lines design, in the background of these beautiful applique quilts. And it's just such a wonderful texture. It looks like wind, basically.
Right.
It's kind of the best description I have for
right.
it. It's a wonderful texture. Match thread on that, and you're still going to see that texture. It's still going to give you an impact, but mm-hmm. it's not going to be competing. There's always that fear of competition, you know, mm-hmm. one thing competing with another thing. You know, personally, if I'm going to spend the time to applique something, here's my total true opinion, Pat. If you're going to take the time to applique something, you really should start at the very beginning before you take your very first stitch mm-hmm. and take some time to think about your quilting design before you applique that quilt, because it's really going to have an impact. You could take some of those applique shapes and quilt them instead, and
right.
that would save you time making those blocks. You could also incorporate, you know, some quilted elements in that applique design, deciding, okay, well, I don't want to do some of these lines, or I want to change this up just a little bit because I'm going to address this in the quilting.
Right.
And that really stitches the quilt up a notch.
It does. It really does. I have one piece that Joanne Hoffman of South Dakota did for me, and she quilted on. It has a snowman, and she quilted wind and big giant snowflakes. And so it just adds to that block so much. It makes it, like you said, it takes it up a couple of notches. People just are wowed when they see that particular block. Let's talk a little bit about the project that you're doing on your website right now. Is that the Free Motion Project page?
Yeah, Free Motion Quilting Project. Are you talking about Express Your Love?
Yes, the lady.
Yeah, that is a goddess. Women, goddess, whatever you want to call it. Basically, I designed this quilt as something to work with together. I've made several goddess quilts. They're just really inspirational. They are amazing to work on. If you've never kind of gone out there and tried something very different, very non-traditional. And so I designed this particular quilt to share with everyone. And so the pattern is free. You can download the free pattern and make the quilt however you want. So I, so far, have not shared any applique instructions, but we're going to maybe get into that a little bit later this year. I've made a whole cloth version, and then right now I have just started a version that is printed on spoon flower fabric. So it was a pre-printed panel.
Wow.
And basically we're just taking that that pattern, the printed panel, and quilting over it. We're learning new techniques. We're learning new designs. All of it is being posted for free. The videos are on YouTube. So I think we're on like 29, 28 videos, something like that.
Wow.
And it's across a wide range of techniques. I mean, yeah. I'm teaching designs, and I'm teaching, what did I teach the other day? Motifs. So how to draw a motif on the surface of the quilt, something brand new that's not there in the piecing, that's not there in the applique, and then to fill it. So all those kinds of ideas, if you're really kind of just confused by everything that's come out of my mouth today, I think that might be a good place to start, because it might at least give some reference for, you know, what is a motif and what is a filler design and how does all this work, and just get some inspiration. More than anything else, what I have learned in the process of making this and sharing this is that mistakes are only mistakes if you decide they are a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only wrong as bad as you let yourself feel. So I've made some mistakes on one of my quilts, and I just admitted it and said I felt bad about it. And I made some big changes to it and taught a technique called trapplique, and then fell in love with it all over again. So it's been a really good growing experience.
Well, Leah, this has been so great. The time has just flown. I know we have more to talk about on this subject, so maybe next month when you come back, we'll expand out and talk about density of quilting and things like that. How's that sound?
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, this is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. These collections are hot, hot, hot. Fig Tree is back with a new collection called Tapestry, which weaves together Greek and Moroccan influences for a beautiful result. We're mad for the plaids in the WeWoven's Brights collection. Next, pull up an Adirondack chair and enjoy The Ocean View by Paul Brent. And finally, Three Sisters delivers a delicious helping of double chocolat with scrumptious colors of dark chocolate, cherry, caramel, and vanilla bean. Stay tuned for more runway reporting. Visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. you won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Get quilting tips and instructions for web-exclusive projects free every week, delivered to your inbox. Sign up today for your free weekly e-newsletter at allpeoplequilt.com.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm really delighted to have the team from Pixie Ladies here today. This is Chris Sasaki and Deb Kashat. They are the force behind the Pixie Ladies. And if you may not recognize their name, but you're going to know their book that they have out. And it's on fabric wrapping. It's this whole great, fabulous process. Plus, you may have taken courses with them online. They do a lot of digital courses, which I'm going to just be so excited to hear about. So I'm really, really happy to have Chris and Deb on the show. Hi, gals.
Hi.
Hi.
So who said hi first? So we get your voices.
Chris.
Okay. And Deb.
Hello. This is
Hello.
Deb.
Okay. Now we got your voices. So, Chris, tell me, how did you get started sewing? What was, you know, your sort of backstory?
Well, I have less of a backstory than Deb, so I'm going to be very short about it. But I sewed because my sister took lessons. And so I sewed with her, and I made my first quilt when I was 17, and then I made my second quilt when I was, you know, 40, blah, 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 with Deb.
Yes.
So I'll let Deb, she has a much better backstory on sewing.
So Deb, what got you into sewing?
I sewed all my life. I started sewing when I was about 7, and my mom taught me to sew, and so that's what I did, and that's what I loved to do, and the fabric was just always a part of my life. So, and then quilting, I'm sort of like Chris in that I made my first quilt in the 70s in the quilt revival, and then I think it was about in the 80s that I took an actual quilting class at our local junior college, and then didn't do anything with that, and then we started making more quilts when we got together.
So how did you two meet? Have you known each other forever?
Forever. We've known each other for over 30 years, so I like to tell people we met in kindergarten.
Yes.
But the truth be told, we actually met in college because I was in German club with her then boyfriend, and he dragged this, you know, little young whippersnapper. She is only a year younger, so let's not. But this young whippersnapper to one of our German club parties. And so we've been friends ever since.
Well, that's pretty fun, you know, to still have a friendship. Have you both lived in the same area? You're in California. Have you always lived there?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
No, Chris actually taught college, and she lived all over the U.S., and she lived in New Zealand, and we've known each other, you know, when she lived in Germany, and so, yes, we've maintained a friendship over long distances.
Wow. That's
because Deb likes to fly.
Oh.
So she I think, Deb, right, you've pretty much visited me in every place I've ever lived.
I think so.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really great. We all need a friend who is going to move around so we have, like, a place to stay.
Exactly.
I always felt that was my duty, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you must have incredible stash. Did you buy fabric everywhere you lived?
You know, actually not so much. But
okay.
Stash, yes, we have.
Yes.
Because we've now, come October, will be our 10th anniversary as the Pixel Ladies.
Wow.
And so in those 10 years, we have our stash.
And I used to manage a Cloth World store. This is Deb. And so I created a stash. I created quite a large stash on my own too.
Right. So why did you guys decide to start a business together? Chris, why don't you go first?
It's just too long of a story for our time, but we'll just say that, you know, I taught and taught and taught, and it was coming to the point where I needed to change careers. And I would call and cry to Deb that, you know, I hated what I was doing. And she would say, just come home and we'll start a business. Just come home and we'll start a business. So yeah. I called her. I said, well, I'm coming home. What do you want to do?
Deb, that's a big job. You had to find her something to do, huh?
Yes, yes. And so we've both been very crafty. We used to get together and watch sappy romantic movies and knit or sew or do something. So we knew it could be crafty, and then we were both very computer literate. So that was another option for us. And I had seen three gals called Digital Atelier at a computer show, and they printed on fabric. And so we both thought about that and said, well, you know, that would be kind of fun to incorporate technology and fabric. And this was 10 years ago, so it was before Spoonflower. And then we decided we would give that a try, and perhaps we would print for other people to support us doing our artwork. And it turned out to be just exactly the opposite. People were more interested in buying our scarves or quilts than they were in having us print for them. So that was an interesting change of plans.
Right. So you actually were making finished goods and selling them at one point.
Yeah. Well, and we still do.
Oh, you still do. Okay.
Yeah.
So you make scarves and what else?
Quilts.
Okay.
And
quilts. Yeah.
And garments, but it's all custom. So, you know, we just do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so tell me this. We're going to talk about the digital part again, but first I wanted to talk about your book. And I'm not sure I know how to pronounce this fabric wrapping technique correctly. So if one of you could pronounce it.
Foroshiki?
Foroshiki.
You know, that great Polish dish called Foroshiki?
I don't know.
Well, many of your listeners will. So all they have to do is put that F instead of the P, and they'll get pretty darn close.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So how did this book come about? Did you become obsessed with this technique, or did you just see a need for it?
I grew up with Furoshiki. My dear Auntie Yuki, never fails to come to a family occasion with her contribution wrapped in a Furoshiki. And so, you know, I just started doing it too because it's really practical to wrap whatever you have in a cloth and reuse. So, you know, we're talking, you know, I was born in, well, it's been a long time.
Right. Let's first describe what it is for people who don't know your book
Right. It's a square of fabric, and I'm sure your listeners probably have a few squares of fabric in their stash. Basically has to be a square, and it could be various sizes, and it all depends about what you want to wrap.
Okay.
And what you do is, with a series of knots and folds, you'll be able to carry what you want. So whether you wrap a box that's decorative.
Culture that this is?
I grew up in a Japanese, half Japanese household. So my father was Japanese American. So my auntie. But the Koreans do something very similar. You know, wrapping in fabric is pretty universal. The Japanese just have fine tuned it to an art. You know, it's all about presentation. And one of our favorite things to wrap, for example, is when we take bottles of wine or bottles of juice or whatever to parties, you know, we wrap it in the fabric. And it's a lovely presentation, and it's also just very practical because you can actually carry two bottles. You won't break them because they're wrapped in the cloth. So to get back, I just would start taking my potlucks to our guild meetings, and everybody kept saying, how'd you do that? That's just so beautiful. How'd you do that? So Deb, of course, turned to me and said, we got to write a book. And that's how it came about. Yeah.
So Deb, what is one of the favorite sort of techniques in the book that you could just sort of walk us through?
Okay. I've got to agree with Chris. I think our favorite is the wine bottle wrap or the juice bottle, whatever you want to wrap. But it's easier to do two of them at the same, wrap two bottles instead
of
one.
Wrap two bottles at once.
So you lay your bottles, and the ends together, and you lay them on a square of fabric that's on point for your quilters. So it's basically you're starting at the corner of the square of fabric and you're rolling the bottles all the way up until they're wrapped. And then when you lift the tails that are close to the top of the bottle and you stand them up, then it just makes a gorgeous package of two bottles.
Now, does your
and then you tie it off with a square knot.
Because a lot of quilters have, yardage, do you need to finish the edges? I'm sure that's more beautiful, but, do you do it without finishing the edges of your fabric?
Well, we like to tell everybody our favorite finish is rip.
No.
We just simply rip, especially using a rayon batik. The raw edge just looks beautiful. So absolutely rip it. Use your specialty rotary cutter. Always looks nice, especially if you're in a hurry. And also, if you're going to actually give the person the fabric, if you're taking it to someone's house for, let's say, a housewarming gift,
right,
and you want to give them the fabric as well, you might consider finishing it, but you don't have to, especially if they're a sewer.
That's right.
They can take that fabric and use it for whatever. So you want to give them some flexibility.
Now, can you use a napkin? Because there's so many pretty napkins, or are they just too
small?
Is
it square?
If it is square, okay.
That's your question. Okay. Always ask if it's a square. We've actually made furoshiki out of a flannel. The knots are a tad big, but they make, the baby, the flannels with the baby fabric. We've wrapped up baby gifts. Lots of fun. Yeah.
And scarves. Don't forget scarves that you've got stashed away in your drawer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, I never thought about that. So a scarf could be, repurposed for the packaging.
Yep. And they're stunning. They make great gift wrapping.
And men's hankies.
Oh, and you could do vintage pieces too, right? Because you could go, out and find antiquing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, not around the Cameron Park, California area, because we've pretty much depleted the scarf supply in all of our local thrift stores.
There's not a single scarf left. They keep them under the table for you when you come in.
Yeah.
So just real quickly, and then we're going to take a break. How many different techniques do you have in your book?
20.
20.
And the back of the book also comes with tear-out cards that you can tear out that have one explanation on each card. So if you wrap, let's say, the two bottles, you can give them the two-bottle wrap card and explain it and pass it forward. Yeah.
We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to continue on with the Pixel Ladies and find out about printing on fabric.
Ready for a new project? Choose from hundreds of free patterns in the Projects and Ideas section of our website, allpeoplequilt.com.
We're back at the Fall 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. It's a great show, folks. Don't forget to mind your P's and Q's with Applejack, an alphabet-themed collection by Tim and Beck. Next, we're taking a journey to a whimsical land filled with cute critters, flowers, and sweet confections with Cherry on Top by Keiki. Hallelujah! The muted reds, navies, and creams of Old Glory Gatherings by Primitive Gatherings brings a nostalgic feel to the runway. And now, something for the men in your life. Trails End combines the beauty of fall leaves and wildlife. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here with Chris Suzuki and Deb Kashat of Pixel Ladies. And we were just talking about their fabric wrapping book, which sounds fantastic. And now we're going to talk a little bit about printing on fabric, because this is something they've had a passion for years. So, you know, I just love the words that you guys are doing on your quilts or your printing. Tell me, you know, let's say, Deb, go ahead, why don't you go first? Tell me, what is your process for printing on fabric?
Okay, well, let me, can I just use the example of one of our text quilts?
Sure.
Would that work for you?
Yeah.
So what we do is we start out cutting out words out of magazines and newspapers, and depending on our topic, and then we use Chris's new favorite product, a repositionable glue stick, and we put them down on paper into a pattern that we want. The current one we're working on is colored pencils, so it depends on, you know, what we want to do. And then we photograph or we scan the paper collage and then print it on fabric and quilt it up.
So you're basically creating this collage in advance, and then so visually it's all with scraps of paper and photos or
correct
anything.
Yes.
And then, Chris, how do you use that in the quilt?
Well, like Deb said, we will scan or photograph that resulting collage into the computer, and it takes a while to print out what we want, because just to put it in the computer and say print, I'm sure your listeners will agree, you know, understand this, the picture doesn't always come out like what it looks like on the monitor.
Uh-huh.
So because we also print using reactive dyes, we have to steam the fabric and wash it before we can use it, so we set the color. And every time we do something, so every step of the process, we putting it into the computer, printing it out, steaming it, and then washing it, changes the color. So the colors shift. So we've actually had to figure out how the end product will look based on what the monitor looks. So the monitor ends up looking really wacky and almost psychedelic in order to come out looking normal.
So what type of printer are you using?
We're just using a standard Epson 9600, which they don't make anymore. They're up to whatever, pick a number. And
standard meaning ours is very large. We can print up to 42 inches wide, but it's still an inkjet printer.
Right.
Okay.
But we put dyes into the printer instead of using the inks that come with the printer.
Really?
Yes.
Oh my. So what kind
what
kind of dyes are you putting in there?
Right. We get our dyes through Jacquard. Mm-hmm. And they have inkjetfabricprinting.com is our supplier, but it's all through the Jacquard company.
Okay.
And we use the reactive dyes. We basically, for our quilt, especially because we're working with the cottons, but we do have a second printer that we've been working with acid dyes. But we can print everything on the reactive, so we're actually trying to just limit ourselves to that.
So when you two are making a quilt, I'm always, you know, fascinated by teams that work together. Do you make your own quilt? Do you collaborate during the whole thing? What is, you know, what is your process?
Go ahead, Chris, take this one.
We work together. We collaborate. I will say, before I get into how we collaborate, Deb does produce more quilts on her own. But for us, we basically do everything together. So if we decide on a project, then we'll hash it all out and do all the arguing ahead of time to figure out what the composition will be and how it will look. So that actually, by the time we print out that fabric, the quilt is almost done.
Okay. So now the whole quilt, you're not printing the whole quilt. You're just printing fabric to use in the quilt?
Well, actually, our recent quilts have been whole cloth, so we have been printing out the print is the cloth.
Wow.
We haven't done piecing in quite a while, actually.
Oh, well, that's fascinating. I didn't realize that. And then the one I'm looking at is the tomato. I love that one, which is on exhibit, I think.
Yes, it is, in Oakland. And that's 12 inches square. So that was pretty easy to do whole cloth.
Yeah.
But we are, since you like tomatoes, we are working, we want to do a larger version. So we want to do a larger version with more tomatoes on it.
And then
we're from the Sacramento Valley, and I mean, I grew up with tomatoes coming out of my ears. So it's just a common theme around here, tomatoes.
And the same process, do you use that for your wearable art that you know, the printing?
Yeah, anything we want. So sometimes, this is Deb, sometimes we want to we want to design completely in the computer. So we will start out, you know, nothing physical, and we'll just actually draw or design in the computer and print out something from that. Other times, you know, we'll start with a photograph or our first scarf that we did together was of a place called Sorensen's in the Sierras, and we scanned leaves, we took photographs of the creeks, all sorts of things. So it's whatever you can think of or whatever we can think of to do is usually how we get to our next project.
Now for people who like are really wild about this, and I know there's a lot of them, you teach this online.
We teach Photoshop online. So we teach how we work in the computer.
Right.
And we
that's
we have
a big part of your whole process for
right. Well, you know, pretty much everything we do starts out in the computer in some form or another. We somehow use the computer.
Uh-huh.
Even in the end, like we've been doing some batik watercolor quilts. We don't necessarily put everything in the computer, but we'll design what we want it to look like in the computer and then go from there. So a lot of our designing is done in the computer. It's a big help in the process.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, your website is Pixel Ladies. It's PIXEL, just one L, ADIES.com. So,
correct.
Yeah, so people can go there and they can see your classes. You do classes in person, too.
We do. And, in fact, we're getting ready to go to Lodi, which is down the road a bit, Grape Country.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to, what type of classes do you teach when you're in person classes?
We've taught everything, haven't we, Deb? But the next couple of classes we're going to teach, we will be doing the batik watercolor quilts.
Okay, so do you ever do your computer classes as in-person classes?
Yes, we have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good,
that
good,
one
good.
Requires people, instead of bringing their sewing machine, to bring a laptop.
Right, bring their laptop,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if somebody was interested in hiring you to do that, you could they could contact you.
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, we want to be sure everybody knows how to get hold of you. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what I'm fascinated with is to be able to print some of that stuff like you're doing and then cut it up and put it in the quilts. You know, I think that's something a lot of people can relate to. You know, they have, you know, just like spoon flowers out there now, but, you know, if you have the ability of with your own printer and the fabrics have been out forever to print on, so... That is so cool. Let me hear about your watercolor quilts, because watercolor quilts are something that, you know, they had a phase when they were done with florals, but yours are done with batiks, and they have like a totally, totally different look. They do look like water. They're amazing.
Take it, Deb.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, what it started out with is a way for us to justify buying batik fabrics. So if you want a way, if you want a reason to increase your stash of batiks, we both love batiks. And so we were doing a commission for a client, and it started out as a watercolor quilt only using batiks. And we
we did a mock-up, and we said, okay, now, do you like it this way or this way? And we did a little sample, traditionally sewn pieced blocks, you know, where they, and then we did another one where it was just the blocks fused onto a backing fabric so that
raw edged,
fused, and the backing fabric showed through, so it created this grid design. Mm-hmm. And
like a mosaic almost.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so think of the backing fabric as grout. Mm-hmm. And then so we asked her which one she liked, and we tried determinately kept our preference hidden from her, and she chose the one with the grid showing, which was what we liked. and so then we just started making it, and it's I think the thing about teaching it is it's because we come with the batik fabrics already cut and fused with misty
pre-fused.
So that when we teach a class, you can finish something in a day. You don't have to cut out all the little squares, and you don't have to sew them together. We can work on actually moving the color around the quilt.
And the other reason why it's a lot of fun is because it's counterintuitive to your quilting education, because you know you're usually looking for light and dark values to get that high contrast, and with the batik watercolors, you're really having to slowly move the color from one range to another, so that you can create lights and darks and shadows, and it's a completely different mindset. So it's challenging for people, but they don't have to have all this work pre-done.
All this stuff done.
So they get to concentrate. Yeah.
This is so fabulous. What a really great idea. Well, we are out of time, ladies. This is I know. It just flies, doesn't it?
It does.
So everybody should visit Chris and Deb at thepixelladies.com. Check out all they're doing. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Pat.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, and you can visit me at patsloan.com. Next week, we'll be back with a whole new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.